Money FM 89.3, best of prime time.
Money FM 89.3, welcome to Sustainable Singapore with me, Rhianne Lovell-Boland. Heat waves in North America and floods in Western Europe and China have dominated the news cycle recently. It comes at a time when negotiations are ongoing to approve a UN science report, which will boost climate action worldwide. The report by an IPCC working group brings together the latest advances in climate science and multiple lines of evidence to provide an up-to-date understanding of climate change. However, some top climate scientists argue that it's futile to wait for the report to say how bad climate change will be, as it will already be out of date when it's published. So do the latest extreme weather events show that science has failed to predict the intensity of climate change? Joining me on the line to give his analysis is Roman Carrasco, Associate Professor, Department of Biological Sciences at NUS. His research focuses on conservation science and tropical sustainability. Thank you so much for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you very much.
Now, let's take a look at some of these extreme weather events that have happened in North America, Germany, and China's Hainan province. Do you think it's raised awareness of what scientists have been warning for years?
Yes, definitely. I think we can feel the impacts of climate change, and we see that there is an amplification on those impacts in terms of heat waves, flood, and this is going to continue increasing. So I think that is raising awareness of things that have been warned before.
I think now these events highlight how climate change is changing so dramatically. So do you think they paint a picture of a world that's already warmed to 1.2 degrees Celsius from pre-industrial times?
Yeah, it's starting to describe what's going to be the norm and what's going to continue to happen. And every few years, we have a new record for the hottest year in history. And I think we have to get used to this becoming the norm. And extremes are going to continue happening. And yeah, this was something that we were expecting, given the 1.2 degrees above average that we have now.
Yeah, and some scientists argue now that it's actually futile to wait for the IPCC report to say how bad climate change will be, as their climate computer models are not powerful enough to accurately project the severity of those extremes. I mean, can you just share what your thoughts are on this?
I think that IPCC has value in the sense that it will set a pathway for us to follow and to point towards the direction in which we have to move, and policy has moved, and industry. So I think it has a high value. And sometimes it's not conducive to have knee-jerk reactions and try to provide answers from one week to another. I think social media is kind of creating this kind of expectation that we have to continuously be producing new recommendations. I think policy needs to have some stable direction that the IPCC provides. But I mean, it's true that there is uncertainty in the models, and I doubt we'll be able to have models that will be able to predict accurately extreme events when and where they are going to happen. This said, in terms of uncertainty, it's not that high when we say that we are moving towards the direction of more extreme events, sea level rise, and that climate change is happening. So even though there is still room for uncertainty in terms of where we are heading and the decisions that we have to take, I think the IPCC will continue to provide a very valuable platform in which there is a consensus as to where we have to work towards.
And are you hopeful for the ongoing negotiations on the IPCC's report? Do you think governments are making climate change a priority?
I see some signs that are positive. Like, we have many developed countries that are reducing emissions, and we see those reductions in emissions not occurring at the expense of the gross domestic product. So they continue to grow in economic terms, and they are reducing emissions. So to me, that's positive. And I'm hoping that it will cut on and other countries will follow the example. But I'm not entirely optimistic because I see still a lot of emphasis on coal and coal emissions. And I see some countries are lagging behind, like China or Canada or Australia. So I don't think we are doing enough, but I see some silver lining. So I'm hoping that these countries that are lagging behind will realize that there are economic opportunities to decarbonization, and that they will commit much more and will start reducing emissions much more. At the global level, we are failing. but some countries are providing success stories.
I mean, you just touched on China, and just last week, China's top policymakers urged for an easing of aggressive measures to reduce carbon emissions to balance economic health with its climate goals. Your research focuses on bioeconomic modelling for a sustainable future. Can you share some of the ways that countries are doing this, and also what are the challenges?
Well, I think the challenge is that we need to invest in new infrastructure, and we need to create a new economic system. So that's challenging. There is a lot of inertia to continue doing what we are doing. But it's also true that those countries that delay in adopting these changes and in adopting green energies, they are going to be less competitive in the future. So I think it's a kind of short-sightedness. It's a mistake to try to ask for delays. We don't have that much time if we want to keep increasing in temperature below 1.5 degrees. So I think we have to be aggressive and see it as an opportunity, not as a hindrance, trying to change the way we sustain our economy.
Mm. And later this year, in November, actually, the UN COP26 summit will be held. What do you think are some of the achievements since COP21 in Paris in 2015? Do you see progress, and has enough really been done?
I think it signals the start of the realization that we have a huge problem ahead of us and the commitments for countries to reduce emissions. So I think that was a step forward. Of course, those commitments are non-binding. But what I see is countries that are leading the way, and I see a signal to update those commitments and to make them more and more ambitious. So I think that's a step forward. Personally, I think the Paris Agreement doesn't have enough to really force all those countries that are lagging behind to contribute.
Yeah. And what do you think about the richer countries that are, you know, mostly, I don't want to use the word to blame, but the ones that produce the most emissions? How do you think COP26 is going to address the inequalities with how climate change affects the poor?
Well, it's one of the main stumbling blocks in the discussion. We have a very unequal distribution of gains and impacts, and they always cripple the discussions. I think we have to move towards recognizing those impacts of developing countries that are going to suffer the heaviest burden of climate change. So in terms of COP26, I don't know how it will pan out. It's very difficult, but I'm hoping that there will be agreements to provide support to countries that are going to suffer, especially small island states. And as science continues progressing and we are able to identify responsibilities in terms of if there is some extreme event and it's due to climate change, I hope that we'll start seeing some suing happening towards companies and countries that are not contributing. And that might help to motivate them to start contributing. So I hope that one day we will see small island nations suing other countries for the situations that they find themselves in.
Absolutely. Now, your research also focuses on, as I mentioned, conservation science and tropical sustainability. Do share with us, you know, a little bit more about what you're focusing on and the impact it's having.
Yes. So we work on one of the other huge crises that we have now, which is the biodiversity crisis. And we are trying to align it with combating climate change. So, for example, we work on trying to see solutions to protect tropical forests for the biodiversity they contain and the ecosystem services they provide to people. And we see them as synergic with fighting climate change. So if we are able to stop deforestation, especially in tropical forests, in peatlands, if we can reforest areas that used to be tropical forests, we can contribute to mitigate climate change by as much as 25%. And we can also contribute to prevent the losing many species, this biodiversity crisis. So that's the area where I focus.
Fascinating. Well, I've been speaking with Roman Carrasco, Associate Professor, Department of Biological Sciences at NUS. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Rianne.
I'm Rianne Lovell-Boland. This is Money FM 89.3.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.